You're listening to Alcoholics Alive, where recovered members of Alcoholics Anonymous share their experience on how they live AA as a way of life. None of our participants get paid or speak for AA. Here are your hosts, Shank and Wayne. Shank, we're back for season 6.
Hard to believe.
It is hard to believe. And I think it's going to be an epic season with the episode topics that we have. So we are actually using some Grapevine books as our meeting topics and our kind of our meeting guides this year. So we were, me and Shank were at a conference not long ago, and there was a Grapevine display. Now, we are not promoting the Grapevine. We
don't work for the Grapevine.
We don't work for the Grapevine. And we believe that the Grapevine has some troubles, actually, with their financials and with some of their content. But we won't go into that right now. We'll probably cover some of that at the
wrap-up episode.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, we were at the conference, and the Grapevine display was out, and there were a lot of those books that are basically just collections of stories, but some of them were pretty catchy titles. So we decided that we would use those titles of those books for titles of our episodes, and that we would bring on guests that kind of had experience at whatever that title is. So That's what you're going to get in season 6. We hope that you'll continue to listen and benefit from it. Remember, we if you're new to the podcast, the podcast is really designed to bring on recovered members of Alcoholics Anonymous that share their experience at how they live AA as a way of life, and that we believe that AA is a way of life, and that the 12 steps, if practiced that way, will not only remove the obsession to drink, but can help you to be effective and useful and have a happy life. So that's why we're here. Now, Shank, one thing I need to say before we introduce the guests. So episode 12, we kept a shrapnel, put the hearse in reverse. So ever since we've kept it, and the people all over the world are saying it now. All kinds of people in the fellowship are using that term, put the hearse in reverse. Nobody knows what it means, but it's catchy.
Well, they should create a Grapevine book titled Put the Hearse in Reverse. Hey, obviously, there you go. The next
That's right.
step here.
Yep. Let's get up with the editor on that. So, hey, we are, we got a great guest on today who hails to us from Oregon. His name's Carmack. Carmack, how are you today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, Jerry.
Yeah, we are. We're glad that you that you're on. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm an alcoholic. My name's Carmack. I've been sober. My sober date's 4/23/89. Got a home group Thursday night men's book study meeting here in beautiful Bend, Oregon. I got a sponsor. Statistics.
There's the stats. How'd you get to AA?
You know, I was raised by some heavy drinkers. I used to mix Red Label Over the Rocks for my dad. So they make French 75s on the weekend, right? So I was brought up, my first drink, I was, he worked at a racetrack, and I went out in the, I hung out with the guys in the maintenance yard, and I was sipping off their beers, and I walked in, he goes, "You smell like beer." I'm like, "Oh." So anyway, I was like, well, my first drunk, got all those guys in big trouble. You know, but I didn't want to be like him. He was a dick and blah, blah, blah. Excuse my French. So I started doing, outside issues, and you know, I ended up drinking his scotch. Oh, I should put the timer on. But anyway, what happened? I mean, I drank in high school. I drank. I worked in shipyards. Got my journeyman alcoholic papers. One story there. I mean, I used to go. You go and cash your check at the bar, and I remember coming to on my couch and all my clothes, and I looked in my pocket. And I got like 20 dimes. And well drinks were 90 cents. So that's how many drinks I had. So fast forward to, you know, I met a woman, I got married, I was gonna have kids and get well. I was looking for all kinds of stuff to get better, to not drink. You know, I was drunk when my daughter was born, and I was gonna stop drinking when the second daughter was born. But that didn't happen either. So in 1987, my stepdad had a talk with me about how it's throwing my life away. I mean, I moved. I got two DUIs in a month. I had a lot of signs. I lost lots of jobs. I spent time in the clink and had a lot of signs that I was an alcoholic. And I used to, you know, yeah, I'm an alcoholic. Freaking, I'll drink you any day. And that's how I lived, right? And he had a talk with me about getting sober, and you know, I went to rehab, got a $5,000 big book. But the best thing about that rehab is they brought in the H&I meeting. They call it hospitals and institution. And I'm walking down the hallway, and I hear all this chatter and laughter. And I walk in this room, and here's a bunch of people standing around, and nobody had anything in their hands, beverages. And I'm like, this is freaking totally foreign to me. But these guys had, I don't remember what the topic was. I don't remember anything about that meeting except that these guys had something that I wanted. They were happy. And I was pretty sad. I was not happy camper. My alcoholism, I was living in the back of my truck, pissing in a coffee can. You know, that's where my alcoholism brought me. Homeless, jobless, hopeless, which is fast forward to going in and out of AA and coming around, going to meetings for skirts and coffee and donuts, right? And I ran into a group of serious guys, right? And I finally asked somebody to be my, I asked this guy to be my sponsor. And he kept asking me, like, hey, Carmack, what kind of alcoholic are you? Oh, I'm like a periodic binge. And he just took his head and we started reading the book. And we read the book, and I started highlighting hopeless. You know, that's what I am. I'm a hopeless alcoholic. I've lost the ability to control my drinking. And somewhere in between, around more about alcoholism, the obsession to drink was lifted for me. And I didn't think about it. For 20 years, that's all I thought about, was getting loaded. And so it was lifted, and I continued the steps. And, you know, the steps are key to freedom, right? I mean, the first step, powers over alcohol, my life's unmanageable. Just a quick story. So I told my sponsor about 6 months in, I'm like, I think I got the second part of the first step. No, I don't think I really need that anymore. And he just laughed. He's like, you just keep coming back, Carmack. So I'm keeping coming back. And, you know, that's the only step that I do perfect. Oh, there's my 5 minutes are up. So, yeah, that's where it got me here. And that's why I keep coming back, right? Because I don't want to.
Yeah.
I want to be sane and sober. I want to be happy, joyous, and free. That's what we're talking about, being happy in sobriety, right?
That's exactly right, Carmack. Thanks for that intro.
Yeah, you bet.
And man, it's good to not have to pee in a coffee cup anymore, a coffee can. Man.
That's pretty impressive. You had one, though.
It is impressive. I was thinking the same thing. I was like, man, a couple times I wish I had a can.
Like, there you go.
I'm a Boy Scout. I'm always prepared.
Mm-hmm. Yes, very resourceful. All right. Well, thanks for that. Shank, what's our topic today?
Our topic today is fun in sobriety, how AA members learn to live sober and enjoy life to its fullest. So in this little blurb about the book, it says, that have features, inspiring stories by members of Alcoholics Anonymous about the many ways they've learned to have a good time after putting down the drink. So, of course, naturally, when I saw that, read that, whatever, I was thinking about, we're not a glum lot. Everyone says that all the time. People in AA love to say, oh, we're not a glum lot. But what I really like, and this is from page 132 in the big book, the fourth edition, is after that, it says, if newcomers could see no joy or fun in our existence, they wouldn't want it. We absolutely insist on enjoying life. And I think I like that part better, where it's not just, I don't know, when I arrived here, I don't know that I would have understand like what a glum lot was or cared at all.
What does it mean? Yeah, it's like.
I like the positive spin, I guess, better on absolutely enjoying, insisting on enjoying life. So that's kind of what it made me think of. Now I have some questions for you guys in relation to absolutely insisting on enjoying life, fun and sobriety. And the first one is, what was an unexpected or surprising way that you found enjoyment and sobriety after joining AA? What you got, Carmack?
So 2 weeks in being sober with my sponsor and starting to read the book, I'm in a meeting and guy raises his hand. He got 2 days. And after the meeting, my sponsor goes, go talk to that guy. I'm like, what? I don't know anything about staying sober. He goes, he probably doesn't believe that I have 4 years, right? Which I'm like, yeah, I get that, right? When I was new, I'm like, no way these guys didn't drink for that long. They're freaking lying. But anyway, I went over to start talking to this new guy. And that's what it took me out of myself. And it was great to see his eyes light up a little bit, right? I went to a meeting last week and I was a half hour early because I didn't remember the right time, and I'm standing at the door and I start talking to this kid. He's 8 days sober, been sober for two, was sober for 2 years, then went out and we talked for half hour. I'm like, holy shit, everything that was bad in my head was gone. It was great talking to a new guy. That's was my first experience with that.
Yeah, I had similar experiences. I always loved driving with other AA members to meetings. We
Oh, yeah.
right, so a lot of folks in our group still do that, but when I was brand new, where I lived, there were only a couple of meetings that were within about 8, 10, 15 minutes. So we would drive to a couple of other towns, Raleigh and Smithfield, to meetings on like Thursdays and Fridays or Saturday nights. And I mean, I'm barely sober and I'm scared to death of everybody. And man, we would get in the car and it would be like another new guy and then my sponsor and then his sponsor. And a couple of things happened. One, it was just fun listening, or it was kind of safe being with those guys. But then hearing my sponsor's sponsor just talk about everyday life and normal stuff. I mean, you kind of look up to people like they're not gods, but there's a high level of respect and you think people are real spiritual. And you've got these ideas about what spirituality is. And then when these guys just talk about normal stuff and they're talking about some of the skirts that were at the meeting also. I don't know. I actually just came to, I loved it. It was just so, it was fun and spiritual and helpful to me. And of course quickly was, we would go out for dinner or coffee and meet for breakfast and those things like that were extremely just fun and kind of got me just back into a little bit of a social life. And that was immediate, right? I mean, they just kind of included me. They're just like, hey, come along. It was, I didn't buck it or try to look for any excuses to not go. I didn't have anything else to do. I went.
I did look for excuses not to go.
Yeah.
But
a lot of people do.
The excuses were just met with, okay, but this is what we're doing. You know, it was just like, well, what else are you going to be doing? And it's like, right. And they're like, okay, well, we're going to coffee before the meeting. Like, we'll pick you up. And it was never, like, I wasn't forced to do anything I didn't want to do, you know, but even my first couple of months of sobriety before things got way worse for me, you know, they're like, oh, we're going to greet at this conference. I didn't understand like what was AA, what was not AA. So this conference was not AA. It was not AA sanctioned, we'll say. And they're like, we're going to greet. You're going to love it. And I'm like, God, the last thing I want to do is have to like talk to so many people as they come through the door. But what I still do today is I like to be a greeter at my home group, at conferences, because then I don't, I get to see everyone. I get to ask their name, know their name. And that was something very unexpected to me that I still find very fulfilling, was being at a door, have a smile on my face. Hey, how are you? The restrooms are over there. There's a coffee pot. So glad to see you. And then I don't have to be having really in-depth conversations with people inside the meeting, but you know, I just be greeting them as they come in.
Right. Yeah.
Did you have something else to say? Yeah.
What's the next question, Shank?
All right. So next, is there something memorable, like a memorable experience or activity, maybe as a group, maybe individually, that made you really realize, emphasize the joy and camaraderie of living a sober life?
So one of my experiences was, I lived in Northern California where there's lots of lakes. And I used to go to this one place called Lake Berryessa and drink a hell of a lot of beer. And I got together with a group of us, like water sports, and we went up to this lake. And it was kind of weird at first, right? Because there's a lot of ghosts around. I remember passing out under that tree and, you know, almost dying over there. And God, we had a great time. We're out swimming and boating, and I'm not near drowning. And we sat around at night and had a big old campfire and had a meeting, right? A meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? I mean, what is a meeting? It was a group. We were just go around, do a little, what's going on with your day or what's going on with you today? And oh my God, it was freaking fantastic, right? And I have since done a lot of campouts with other alcoholics. And in fact, my men's group, we do a camp out, and you know, it can rain, or the one guy keeps the fire going 24/7. I mean, all the chocolate in my pocket melted to my coat because fire was so hot. But yeah, it's great. You really get to know guys. Like you said, we got, I got to know new guys at the campouts because you get a lot of one-on-one time. I mean, I ditto what you said earlier. I mean, I spent a lot of time at the coffee table after meetings and got to go, oh my God, these guys have real lives. They have wives, they have children. They show up to work every day and they got their stuff together. And that was a great example for me of what a recovered alcoholic's life can be like, right? Because I had no clue, no clue. I was just like, you know, we get in here, we're a little foggy and really beaten up, and it's wonderful to see because it gives you hope, right? I mean, my God, I might be a hopeless alcoholic, but look at these guys, they're better. I can have this, right?
Yeah,
and that's what he told me. He said, "Do what we do, and you'll get what I got. You'll get what we got."
Yeah, yeah. I got sober. I mean, I guess all three of us probably got sober young, fairly young. I was 22, and I mean, I think I've said this in the past. I don't know how strong it really was. I wondered like what life was going to be like, you know, not drinking. course, my life was so bad drinking. I didn't want to go back to that. But you wonder, like, well, what's going to happen? Or, you ever going to have any fun? Or what's and yeah, I mean, I immediately just knew that none of that was all that was just kind of false stuff in my head, because quickly was taken to like cookouts and conferences. And I God, I would go to those conferences and be so scared to talk to people and stuff, but they were fun. And once you get over that initial nervousness and stuff, have a blast. But we would do, I found out you can do all kinds of stuff sober, right? Go to ball games, and we went to basketball games and started going to some concerts and stuff with people that were in the program. I got sober. I'm like, I'm never going to be able to go to a rock concert. You just can't do that, because I like your word ghost. There are all kinds of ghosts at those places, right, that are going to come get you, and all that stuff is just false. I remember one real memorable experience. Me and my sponsor went to Canada for the 50th anniversary of Alcoholics Anonymous in Canada. I'd have to go back to figure out exactly when it was. I want to say it was in 93 or 94. It was before the International in San Diego, which was in 95. But we flew up there, and there were some folks up there that we met, and God, we had a blast. Tom I's sponsor at the time, Cecil Corrigal, he was the main speaker, and they like blew open the door and rolled this red carpet out, and they paraded him in with these bagpipes. It was awesome.
Find the talk. I
it,
want to hear
it
that.
and but anyway,
Funny.
we had just a great time going to that. And of course, I've been to every to all those internationals ever since 95, and have just thoroughly enjoyed them. But that one in Canada was it was special. And I didn't really realize, the extent of what I where we were at, but it was a great time. Now, Shank, you spent your first year in prison, so I don't know if that did you have fun in there?
The incredible thing is, I think, is I didn't have fun necessarily. We won't call it fun, but I was very free and I had a relationship with God and like all of these women from my home group that I had known for 2 months prior to going to prison were writing me. They were coming to visit me. They knew the women that brought the AA meeting in. And I personally got a lot of like solace and saw the joy in people, just knowing that like these women would come to this prison every week together. And just the stories that they would tell, like, well, today, we went down to this coffee shop, we grabbed a cup of coffee, and we were talking about like, are we going to be able to get in here today? And even just like the smallest little things of them having joy in their lives. And it was the same ladies that would be there pretty much every week. So you get to kind of know them in a little bit of a different way. What, like, they weren't telling me anything crazy about their lives. Like, I didn't know too much information. I just knew that even those small things, which is kind of what it is for me today, I've done a lot of really fun things in AA. I've done a lot of fun things with sober people. We went and whitewater rafted the Gali, which is something I'd wanted to
That
do
was
forever.
awesome.
It was so fun, and they take a video for you, and like I just find myself watching that every once in a while. Like, God, that was so fun. And I mean, I didn't really ever do anything before I started drinking. I got sober kind of young too. I just wasn't capable personally. So being able to do things just period, I'm like amazed. I'm amazed that I can drive to a meeting an hour away with a group of people and have a good time and just drink Red Bull and listen to good and bad music and sing karaoke. Like everything is incredible to me. I'm like, well, I mean, that was pretty fun. Was that any more or less fun than going in whitewater rafting the Gali? I don't know. They were equally just as cool to me.
You
Yeah,
were a good
whitewater
captain.
rafting, that was on one of the first things I did that get the major head rush hitting that first class three rapid, right? Like,
yeah.
Woo! And no hangover, right?
Well, yeah, and you know, with another group, we went to just like several places in North Carolina, which are not nearly as, I mean, they're just like nothing compared to going to West Virginia, but we just like had such a good time, and it was a small group of people, everyone's sober. Surprisingly, no one on that trip even smoked cigarettes, which was bizarre. We all put that together, like, wow, no one smokes or vapes. Maybe someone
that is unusual.
It was like, and just being able to laugh about that, not that anyone cares, who cares? Plenty of people smoke and vape, but it was just like making different connections. It was so fun. We put a unicorn face mask, you know, on a guy who's been sober forever. so I have those blackmail photos. That's pretty fun. That's camaraderie.
Yeah. It's funny, the road trips. So we make these road trips to a meeting that's a little over an hour away monthly. And we have a big passenger van where, you know, it fits about 15 people. And some people are, I mean, you know, there is the element of taking life serious and keeping your recovery serious. But sometimes we'll get new people in the van, not necessarily new in recovery, but new to the van and to the trip. And some of them, I think we're more spiritual than we are. When they get in that van and they hear that music that we play, some of it's raunchy rap or really just stuff. And some of us start singing it. They're like shocked.
Yeah.
They're like, I can't believe y'all are playing that music.
Mm-hmm.
And hey, we're here to have fun. We're free.
Well, to your point earlier, someone brought up it. So my home group, also our home group, goes out to eat before every meeting. And, you know, that's kind of where, I don't know, we talk about, for me, I'm a very private person just in general, but I talk about what's going on in my life, any crazy redneck crap that's happening.
At dinner.
Yeah. And it's not relevant to the meeting or my alcoholism, truly. So, but what's interesting is like even discussing things that are going on in AA, I remember being at dinners and coffees and I didn't want to have to talk at all. And the women around me or the group of people around me were talking about all the stuff going on in AA. And I had no freaking clue what they were talking about. But I knew that they were upset or ticked off or something was going on in AA that shouldn't have been or something was happening. And I'm like, God, I will never understand any of that. And at dinner the other night, someone was like, I have no idea what you're talking about, but I believe that it's true. You know, and I'm just like, wow, when did that happen?
Yep. What's the next question, Shane?
All right, Carmack. How have you maintained a sense of adventure and enthusiasm for life while navigating challenges in sobriety? Have you had any challenges in sobriety?
Oh, yeah, I've had some challenges. Divorce. Yeah, I married an alcoholic, and oh my God. I remember I was going through a divorce, and I went to the barber, and I look on the ground, and I see all this gray hair. I'm like, what, did you have a little blue hair in front of me? Because, no, that's all you. All the white hair was coming off my head from the stress. And I had picked up bike riding. When I first got sober, I used to ride motorcycles, and I went and test drove my ex-brother-in-law's motorcycle, and I drive like an idiot, right? So I'm like, I got two small kids, and I want to see them get old, so I'm not going to buy a motorcycle. So I started riding bicycles, and I would ride that with them. And when I was going through that divorce, I would get off work, I'd get on my bike, I'd go see, because I wasn't getting visitation, I'd go ride my bike, and I go to a meeting, and then we go out and get burritos after, right? Because I would get all the steam out, right? Like, and then I would go to, it's all her, right? It's all that and this and that and whatever. But anyway, and then I'd go to a meeting, and then we'd go to burritos after, and I would talk about what's going on. And by the time I was like, you know what? God's going to take care of me. I just got to keep showing up. Everything's going to be okay. And, you know, everything in retrospect, everything is I mean, I'm still here. I'm still sober. I have a great relationship with my daughter. You know, I got through all that. There's been a couple other, I mean, like I told you guys beforehand, I retired in 2020 and moved to Bend, Oregon from the San Francisco Bay Area. Big change, right? But it's great. I love, they got mountain biking here. I got 30 minutes to go ski. And a year later, I get diagnosed with freaking throat cancer, throat and lymph node cancer. And, you know, it was scary. And what did I do? I just freaking prayed and I did everything the doctor told me to do. Kept my meeting scheduled up. And, you know, here I am. I'm here to talk about it. So never, you know, I mean, like I said, I'm recovered from alcoholism. I don't think about drinking. I thought about a lot about life and what do I want to do? What are they? There's like philosophers say, live every day like it could be your last. So boom, that came really true to me, right? And thank God I got a little black and tan coonhound, and she would come over. I'd be sitting at the table, and oh, fatigue. It was really bad fatigue because of radiation and chemo. And she'd put her head on my lap and look up. I'm like, okay, let's go. And I'd take her for a walk. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, she was my best therapy. I mean, my wife was really good too. I mean, don't get me wrong. I got more pictures of my dog and my phone than I do of my wife or anybody else.
That's pretty standard.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So that's what I did. I just kept showing up, right? I made every one of my appointments, and I kept going to my meetings. I mean, I had a GSR position, and I thank God we could do it on Zoom. Yeah, I just kept showing up, you know, and I got through it, and I'm back to. I mean, I was the only guy on the mountain. I had throat cancer, right? So I couldn't eat. So they put a feeding tube in, right? So I was eating like Ensure, juiced up Ensure, like 385 calories. And I'd have to have about, I had an IV bag. I mean, I would go around the house. I could take a nap with it. So anyway, my doctor says, you're the only guy on the ski hill with a freaking feeding bag, right?
And that's awesome.
Because you're going to burn up a lot of calories. And you're, I mean, so I would, because I couldn't eat. Yeah, I mean, but so anyway, I kept getting out. I would ski. I would bike. I would take my dog for a walk. Yeah. And I'm recovered from I'm clean as far as my tests go for cancer, you know. I don't regularly share this on a group level at my meetings. It's not relevant.
Sure.
You want to talk about having fun in sobriety, right? I have a business card that says happy, joyous, and free over the top of it. And I don't know, that might be something to bring up for shrapnel, right? I know some people are not good about giving a hand out cards at meetings, but it also says cunning, baffling, and powerful. Because that's what alcohol is, right? And but it's like you said, Shank, I insist on enjoying my life, right? I mean,
yeah,
why else are we on this planet, right?
Well, something that's interesting is, you know, when it to me, now I don't know that this is the correct definition, because I heard someone use the definition or like the saying of, you know, this person wears life like a loose garment. And that just is like what it reminds me, you know, when you're going through all of these things in your life, like obviously your health, like you could get, like you're really going through it, but you were staying, it sounds, you know, like you were just staying the path, staying the course, wearing life like a loose garment. Like, okay, well, what else do I have to do? I have to get this treatment. I have to have this bag and drink 20 more Ensures because I'm going to go skiing. But yeah. That's kind of what it makes me think of. And I aspire to be like that. You know, there's like all this background noise of things that happen in my life. You know, I think I do a decent job, but all the background noise, all the, I just call it like the redneck shenanigans that are always happening within, my kind of like direct lineage, if you will. And I don't have to get so wrapped up in it, and I can continue every single day, which I think this is what partly what fun and sobriety is about, is that I've learned the longer I stay sober that I don't have to make all of these things either my entire personality, or I don't have to tell every single person about it. I don't have to be a Debbie Downer. I don't have to say, wow, you're never going to believe what's going on in East Tennessee, which is where the redneck things happen, where I grew up, Carmack. I mean, I do say those things to some of my friends, like, wow, there's some stuff happening. But in order to continue to have fun and sobriety, I keep my schedule the same too. Go to my meetings, have a good time, meet with my sponsees.
It's
Yeah,
one
I
of
always
the
thought that God, it's, sorry, you, I was just always think in my head that God didn't bring me this far to duck me on my butt, right? So I'm just gonna have faith, and faith without works is death. So I gotta keep doing this, doing the dance, doing the thing.
Perfect example.
Yeah, it doesn't really look like that's a solution to anything, though. But it really is when things are really good, you keep doing what you were doing that helps you to get there. When things get really bad, you just keep doing what you were doing, and you know if I think that's one of the things that's helped me, and I think that's what y'all were talking about is being consistent with some certain spiritual practices, meaning meetings and praying and sponsorship and all the things that we do that in good times and bad. And if we can do that, it helps us to be humble in the good times, and it helps us to have faith during the difficult times. And I mean, I think to answer the question specifically, Shank, that one of the things that's helped me in maintaining like a positive attitude or enthusiasm for life during difficult times is not living in the past. And I don't, I mean, I just, and I see it so much with people in Alcoholics Anonymous. They continue to live in the past. Even some of the folks, like hanging out at the clubhouses, they just want to talk about what happened yesterday and years ago and the good old days. I don't know anything about the good old days is right this minute, right now. There ain't no, I mean, so I think Carmack talked about living in the moment and living for right now. And sometimes we joke about some of those sayings, but that's the ticket, is living right now and looking forward and having faith. And that does help you get through the difficult times. And when something bad happens, the first thought I have is not, oh, should I go to the meeting tonight? But that's what a lot of people think. Oh, I bumped my toe. Not feeling real good. Maybe I don't need to go pick that guy up, or God, I really, cut my fingernail a little too deep. I probably shouldn't go to the prison meeting today. I mean, that stuff just, that's
Or
not
even
very.
the really bad things. I mean,
Right.
even something that is like horribly terrible. To me, I'm just like, okay, well, I can still go take this hour and a half to keep this commitment that I've had for 5 years. Like, what is going to change in an hour and a half? Nothing, typically.
That's right. Yeah. And you said it really is more of an internal, like, hey, we're free. We're not, if we're not trying to control things and we're not trying to, make everything to suit us, it sure makes life a whole lot more enjoyable.
Yeah, I
I was
totally
thinking,
agree.
I go ahead, Carmack.
I got some you hear guys, people go to meetings. Oh, I really need a meeting. I'm like, oh yeah. I mean, maybe you should go talk to that new guy over there. But I go to meetings whether I need it or not, and I go to meetings to bring something, right? I don't go to meetings. I heard tissues, tears and tissues the other day. I'm like, I love it.
Write that down, Shank.
I'm writing it down.
I mean, that's what you bring to the coffee table. That's what you
That's
talk to your sponsor about. Pick up that
right.
freaking 100,000-pound phone and call your sponsor and tell them what's going on. Mm-hmm. Don't bring that crap to the meetings. The meetings is about the solution to alcoholism, right? I don't want a newcomer to go and go, look, listen to these old guys. They don't.
Yep.
Do I want what they want to have? No way. Yep. They're a bunch of freaking whiners.
That's right.
What guys who are excited about life and want to bring. It talks about in the book, right? Man, let's bring something to life. And I'm not good at quoting, but it says it in the book, and we
talks about going to events and stuff like that. That we should bring something there and not look at what we can take.
Correct. But, that's what my sponsor. Yeah. I remember that when I was early sobriety, I was complaining to my sponsor. He goes, well, don't worry about what you're going to get. Worry about what you're going to bring, right? And you want to get way more out. I mean, Christmas, I don't know if you guys got kids, but when you're giving gifts, it's the best gift you will ever get, right? Is that. And when you come to an event and you bring a big old chocolate cake, we have monthly meetings, potlucks, and it's great. I mean, people bring all this good food, and you get to put a little bit of food on your plate. And I brought a big old cake, and I said, "Oh, that cake's so good!" Right? And it was a Costco cake, and my wife had the great idea to cut it up early. What can I bring to make life better?
I got story after story of stuff I've done sober that's been fun, but I was thinking this is, so I went swimming in the ocean in Florida and skiing in Alaska all in the same day.
That's crazy.
That's crazy.
That is crazy.
That is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
That was double fun, super fun.
Nice.
So yeah, there's a lot of stuff. Man, a lot of stuff that we get to enjoy in life because we're sober. Shank, you want to move on to meeting shrapnel?
All right, Carmack, buckle up. We have arrived at our meeting shrapnel segment. So this is a segment of lore, myth, and sayings frequently heard in AA. And what we do is we will keep it or we'll scrap it. And we do have a super scrap available.
Shane.
So there you go. Yeah.
I got to say something.
All right.
Before you move forward. Now, so for the listeners, this just popped in my head. I was on another podcast recently and they brought up meeting shrapnel. Now, I gave Shank the credit for coming up with that term, but then I did make a comment that maybe she got it from her boyfriend. Well, just who is now her fiance. I just want to go on public record that he did not come up with that.
Thank you.
So Shank is responsible and completely the author of the term shrapnel for our podcast.
Nice.
And she's also an awesome host, the best ever. So.
All right. Now you're laying it on too thick.
Yes. All right. Let's
all
roll.
Right, Carmack.
Your kitty cat co-host.
That's right. Did you see her?
Yeah.
All right. Our first meeting shrapnel is, has anyone told you they love you today? What do you think, Carmack?
I mean, I gotta tell myself in the mirror sometimes, hey, you're a good guy. I love you, right? What I want to do is, have you told anybody else you love them, right? I mean, if you told your kids, your wife, your dog, right? Your cat.
Cat.
It's all about giving, I think, rather than getting. But that's just my opinion.
This one, it makes you, it's so uncomfortable when you're at a meeting, and I've had it happen this year at two different conferences, where this guy, or they'll come up to you and say, hey, Jerry, has anybody told you that they love you today? It's so uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's just, it seems insincere. And I did come up with a good answer for the question.
What was it?
Well, you were there when that one guy came up and he said, just real serious. Has anybody told you that they love you today? And I looked at him. And I was like, "Well, as a matter of fact, they have." And he didn't know what to say. It kind of defused him. But it's yeah. I don't understand where it came from. And if you're out there listening, please stop saying it to me. I've had plenty of people tell me they love me. I don't need you to remind me. Shank, do you like it? You ever used it?
I don't like it. I don't
No.
use it. It's just not for me. I mean, I guess we all grow up in different ways, and I've always been told how much I am loved and how proud people are of me, and it's awkward even when it's, I'm not saying I was doing anything great or lovable. In fact, I'm
Right.
saying I was not, and I was still told those things, which is very confusing. But yeah, this and it's usually with a hug. I don't like to hug. I'm not a hugger, so I think I probably I have the two in my mind together.
Yeah.
I say scrap it. What do y'all want to do?
Carmack?
Scrap it.
I'm scrapping it. Shank?
It's out of here.
Right.
Our second meeting, shrapnel, is progress, not perfection.
Well, I think that's in the book.
No.
So
So,
I
editor's note, now that you bring it up, page 60, spiritual progress, not spiritual perfection.
Oh.
Little different, huh?
Yeah, thank you for that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That makes a lot more sense. I know I used to meet an old guy that would say that he's sober contingent on the maintenance of the spiritual condition. And he goes on to say some other stuff, right? And that's puts it in context, right? So progress, not perfection, is a shortcut, because that is spiritual progress. It makes a lot more sense about spiritual progress. I like to think that I'm a work in progress, right? I'm an evolving human being, and I'm fallible, and so I kind of like that for the new guy, right? You don't have to be so hard on yourself, and oh my God, you couldn't believe what happened, and no, it's fine, dude. You're here. You're here. You're talking about it, and you didn't fall off the face of the earth. God's still watching out over you. You're still breathing air, so just keep coming back. Go home, do an inventory about it. Call your sponsor and we can talk about it. So I kind of think it's a defusing thing, right? Where you think, oh my God, the world's gonna end. I didn't pay my taxes today, and you know, well, guess what? There's always tomorrow, and there's a CPA out there that'll help you, and blah 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 blah. So we have a program for living here, and there's instructions in there, right? That the big book, and there's lots of good solutions in there, and so I think that's where I base my sobriety from, and that's where I think that something like that, you can point them in that direction, right? And so I my my I say keep it.
What do you think, Jerry?
Well, progress, not perfection, Shane. I think that's, I think it is diffusing. Probably even gives people hope if they're new and they're, and they're not feeling right, or they've made a mistake. I know it probably helped me. Somebody saying, "Hey, we're all about progress and not perfection," and that's the important thing. I do think it's misused sometimes to justify people's inappropriate behavior that they've done purposely. Mm-hmm. You know, some dude will go spend his, you know, daughter's, you know, school money at the casino and totally screw stuff up, and then, you know, "Oh, well, you know, Jerry, it's progress, not perfection." Well, okay. Yeah. Or you know, Billy mentioned this on one of the episodes, that guy comes up and says, "Yeah, I acted on some old behavior last night." And it's not real old if you did it yesterday, right? I mean, it's like, yeah. So I think that when it's misused sometimes, but even our little deviation from what the book says, it's probably useful. Mm-hmm. But I'm gonna reserve my vote until the shrapnel master.
I think that we should. I think we should keep it on the grounds of using spiritual progress, not spiritual perfection, instead of just progress, not perfection, because then it brings it back. What my sponsor constantly has to do for me is bring me back to God, back to a higher power, back to the point. What am I doing here? So I think that helps it get it back to a spiritual solution here.
So are you making an amendment to it?
I'm making an amendment.
We're going to have to get General Service Conference to... Oh, I guess it's already...
Sir Chair.
No, you're in charge of shrapnel, so you can do what you want to do. So,
oh, well, then that's what I'm doing. And y'all deal with it.
That's right. Now we're talking. So then what we need to start doing, Carmack, is we've got to start adding the term spiritual in there.
I like that.
I do too.
Yeah,
spiritual progress, not spiritual perfection.
Because I listened to your the podcast with Billy N, and I came out of there on fire, because I'm like, yeah, I'm recovered from alcoholism. I don't use alcoholic thinking anymore, right? Because I use that in meetings. Oh, I suffer from the ism, and I'm like, you know what? Actually, I don't.
That's right.
Human thinking that sometimes thinks like I used to think, right? I mean, like, oh yeah, I won't go in. What's some of the thinking? Yeah, if I eat some more chocolate, I'm gonna feel better. Not wrong, right? I'm gonna have a freaking stomach ache, and it's not gonna come out good. Uh-huh. So I'm gonna have my couple little pieces of chocolate, and I'm good, right?
All right. Yep. So are you gonna keep spiritual progress? No, it's not. Are you going to keep it? Scrap it.
Yeah, I say, yeah, spiritual progress, not perfection. I like it.
Thumbs up. I'm keeping it. Shank?
All right, we're keeping it.
Listen, if you're listening to this, we have broke new ground. We've never kept a shrapnel this quick.
We have it.
Wow.
Yeah, not on the first episode. Carmack with us leading the way.
Just trailblazer.
You're a trailblazer, Carmack. Yep. You're inspiration. You're inspiring us to reach for higher highs.
Okay, right. Cool. Bring some West Coast vibe into the action.
There you go. All right, our meeting shrapnel number 3. Change is a process, not an event.
Wow.
I've never heard that before.
Where do you get this stuff from, Shay?
I hear it all over, far and wide.
This probably came from a listener, didn't it? Or
I think it did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Carmack, what do you think about that one?
I mean, life is a process, right? I don't know what to think about it. I mean, I don't, not an event. Yeah, I mean, life is a process. Every day I process my life. I ask God for direction. And if I don't, I usually end up going back and have to clean up something and pray then. So I don't know if that's part of the process. I'm not really sure. I don't really understand the definition of this saying.
Jerry, what do you think? Can you clarify?
Well, no. I it sounds like something that I would have learned in another life at a leadership conference at work. Yeah, change is a process, not an event. I think it's probably saying that we're continuously going to have to change, and it's just not a one-time thing, that we don't change one day and everything's fixed. It kind of ties into progress, not perfection, a little
bit. That's what I was going to bring up. It's like, this just sounds like...
But it's a little more kind of corporate, psychological, if you will, feeling. It's definitely not something that I would say to somebody. I mean, I just can't imagine the helping another alcoholic and this being something that I would say to him. I mean, I don't know.
So are you saying you want to scrap it?
I do. I'll scrap it. Carmack?
Yeah, I agree. I would never say that to a new guy. I mean, I would say scrap it.
Have y'all ever heard it said?
I have never.
I've heard,
I don't have that experience.
Yeah. Shank, you've heard it?
I think it's, to your point earlier, Billy's point maybe, I think it's generally like someone has acted out on, quote, old behavior, and they're like, oh, well... You know, kind of the typical same thing, like, oh, well, change is a process, not an event. Like, you've had some change in your life, but you're going to continue to change and have setbacks, and let's circle back and let's whatever else people say, the corporate world. I don't know. I don't work in the corporate world, but.
Right.
An event. That's where you bring a cake or some soda to an event, right?
That's right.
Change.
Well, I think this does, to your point. I think it ties into spiritual progress, not spiritual perfection. We can just say that, and that covers, you know, if you messed up, said something you shouldn't have, I do that.
No.
And I know. I need to dig deeper into my spirituality.
So, Carmack, you scrapping it?
Scrapping it.
I'm scrapping it. Shank?
I'm scrapping it. It's out of here.
All right. It's out of here. So, we got to keep using spiritual progress, not spiritual perfection.
There you go.
Like it.
Yep. Carmack, we appreciate you coming on and kicking off season 6 for us. It's been great to have you.
Right. Thank you so much for asking.
Been great to get to know you a little better. And if you're out there listening, feel free to follow us or share our podcast with other members of Alcoholics Anonymous, or you can share it with people that aren't members of Alcoholics Anonymous if you want to. But we'd appreciate that. Also, you can send us any shrapnel or suggestions or comments at freedom@alcoholicsalive.com. And remember, if you get sober, you can have fun in sobriety, you can have fun in life, and that the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous can help you be free.
Freedom.
Thanks for listening. If you have a comment, suggestion, or just need help, you can email Shank and Wayne at freedom@alcoholicsalive.com. Remember, we're recovered members of Alcoholics Anonymous, but we do not speak for Alcoholics Anonymous, nor do we get paid. Join us next week for another great episode.